Let's get started with the first lecture here, which will deal with, basically, in the beginning, at least here, the French Revolution. So let's discuss, very briefly, the general life before the French Revolution. So the Industrial Revolution led to a certain imbalance in the population, in that there was a great amount of wealth among small portions of the population. There was no real middle class, per se, and if you weren't in the aristocracy, you're basically starving. So it wasn't not a very fun experience. And the kings, in general, ruled by divine right. There was no real questioning. This was something that was basically handed down. That was the king, and that was it. Okay, now in terms of Jewish life, so I just want to quickly move back to the beginning of Ashkenaz, just to mention this in passing, that Jews were basically in Ashkenaz, depending how you exactly define Ashkenaz, either Germany per se or France, perhaps in earlier times even Italy, because Jews came down that way. We were basically there from the destruction of the Second Bais in around 66 CE, and then Jews began to come to Italy. They spread to France and to Germany. The earliest evidence of Jews in Ashkenaz is, as I understand it, from around 321. However, there are legends, there are legends about everyone, there are legends in Ashkenaz too, that there were Jews there really from much earlier times, perhaps even from the Bais Rishon or even before that, but we really have no evidence for this, so their legends, do with them what you like. A lot of the German Rishonim and Achronim we have among, like, the Maharil, the Rush, Chasam Sofer, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, so they discuss the Ashkenazi heritage as being how it was always very strong, and that we basically, with some exception, but we basically really, the Ashkenazim, they really clung to their Torah life, and they never really gave up on it. We know that there were Jews that were absolutely slaughtered throughout time, and although there was some conversion rate, it was never a mass thing, and most Jews, I forget the exact proportions, but most Jews stayed Jewish and preferred to die rather than converting. Now, Poland began to have Jews around the 15th century or so. Both the Maharshal and the Bach, who were in Poland, they continue this same idea of the Ashkenazi tradition being reliable, just like the Rush, the Maharil, Chasam Sofer, etc., just like they discuss as well. And this is a different topic, really, for a discussion of how Ashkenazim have kept their Minhagim. You can see various works by Rav Binyamin Shlomo Hammerger. You can find information for that on Moreshes Ashkenaz, I think it's .org. So Jews had relative peace until the Crusades, and nevertheless, Jews were always considered second-class citizens even before this, and they had a little stability, and everything was really dependent on the local leaders. Jews were commonly expelled from one part of Germany to another. In some places, Jews were considered property, etc. Nothing wonderful. So just to mention some of the major persecutions, definitely not a comprehensive list. There were the Crusades in 1095 to 1096, another Crusade 1146 to 1147, the third one in 1187, and there were more Crusades, no shortage of those. And there were blood libels. I believe the first one was in 1235 in the town of Fulda. And Hermann Schwab writes in his book that the emperor, that was Frederick II, he protected the Jews from this first blood libel, and afterwards it was basically downhill. The church was viciously anti-Jewish. In 1241, there was what was termed Judenschlacht in Frankfurt, which obviously means Jew slaughter. In the 13th century, Jews were made to wear a badge. The archdiocese in Mainz, that's part of the Kehillos of Shum, they made the official color yellow. And we, throughout history, have seen that Jews have been forced to wear these yellow, either stars or circles or whatever they are. There was the Rindfleisch persecutions at the end of the 13th century, and that destroyed about 140 German communities or so. In 1336, 1337, there were mobs that destroyed 110 communities. So hundreds, really, of communities were destroyed throughout many, many difficult years. And through all this, the Ashkenazim were known as those that stuck to their Judaism and their traditions. And this could be in contrast to let's say, in Sfard, where perhaps not to this, they maybe didn't stick to their Judaism to the same level or in the same way. So we'll see soon why this is important, because when Reform came along, or when the ideas of Enlightenment came along, all this changed, and it changed quickly and very drastically. Okay, so now we'll continue into discussing some information about the French Revolution, life after the French Revolution and its effect on the world, modernity and Enlightenment, and maybe a little bit about Kant. So the American Revolution, from 1775 to 1783, it concluded with the Declaration of Independence in 1776, and this idea that America stood there as, like, at least on paper, as a beacon of freedom, really gave hope to the European masses. And America showed the world that equality, again, at least in writing, could be the norm. And other ideas of freedom from different philosophers spread around. This idea of divine right was really pushed to the side, that men themselves are capable of thinking for themselves, and to use their senses. And Kant, he was 1724 to 1804, he really led a lot of this. He really put into effect this scientific method being applied to life, and that all information available to a person's senses need to be used to examine the world. You can't just rely on others. Anyway, we'll discuss Kant later in more detail. So all these tumultuous ideas of freedom and equality, this all eventually led up to the French Revolution that came in 1789. The slogan of the revolution, very famous, known as Liberty, Equality, and Brotherhood, and the basic statement was that all men are equal. The result of this was the kings in France, they had their power greatly reduced, and the government changed, and people were generally in charge. Now, following Kant and definitely other philosophers, man was considered the center of the universe, and man, because he has senses and because he has a brain, he has to use his brain to reason, to think things out. And science, so to say, in a lot of ways, really replaces religion. Before the French Revolution, religion really was the dominant everything in Christian Europe. And afterwards, this tone really changed, that science replace that, and because science replaced it, and man runs science, man really becomes the center of everything. Men are basically considered good, doesn't matter what their religion is or their race is. You have humanism, which really comes to the fore. Again, same idea, people are good, etc. And these ideas spread throughout Europe. Okay, so in the next lecture, we will begin by talking about Jewish life after the French Revolution and Enlightenment and Reform, and how this started to really change Judaism.